Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime. Kansas City wins the game.
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You were listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited to be here with you on this Red Friday, getting you ready for a pivotal Week 4 matchup between the Chiefs and the Ravens. This is certainly not the scenario that we both envisioned for these teams, looking at both of them being at 1-2. One of them is going to head into October 1-3. The other team is going to be 2-2 and certainly put themselves in a much better situation to either win their division and or make the playoffs heading into the month of October. We'll definitely get to that throughout the course of the show. In about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Tim Barbalace. He covers the Baltimore Ravens. We'll take a closer look at the enemy, the opposing team, the road team, heading into Sunday afternoon's game. We're also going to be joined by Nate Taylor. He is going to join us in studio in the 4 o'clock hour. He now works for ESPN. We got a lot of Chiefs to get into. We will talk some college football. This is a major weekend on both sides, the college and the pro side of things. We'll talk about that more as the show progresses. Before we do any of that, I need to remind you guys of a couple of things. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. I need you to tell one friend to check out the show. I mean, two friends would be great, but if you could just tell one friend to check out the show, you know what, man, I would greatly appreciate that. And number three, and this might be most important, remember that the open of the show is brought to you by our friends over at The Other Place. So if you're looking for a place to watch some football this weekend, you're looking for a place with some great food specials, some great drink specials, then look no further with our friends over at The Other Place. So I went back because I was curious just to see what the Vegas feeling was around the Chiefs and the Eagles. Now, when the game went off the board, when you can no longer bet on the game, it actually went as a coin flip pick 'em kind of game. I understand why that was the case. The Eagles certainly deserve a measure of respect, them now winning 19 of their last 20 games and defeating the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. And the Chiefs being the home team, they certainly deserve a lot of credit and respect as well. But when you look at this game, it has pretty clearly been Ravens minus 2.5 the entire week. The line has never moved in the direction of the Kansas City Chiefs. Vegas is telling you that they believe that the Ravens are a better team than Kansas City, that they would be favored in any scenario right now against Kansas City. If they're 2.5-point favorites at Arrowhead, they'd be favorites at a neutral site, and they would obviously be favored at home in Baltimore. Now, I know what the Eagles have done to be treated like the better team between them and Kansas City. They have proven it on the field. They beat them last year in the Super Bowl. They are a better team today than the Kansas City Chiefs. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know what the Ravens have done to be in the same category as Philadelphia, where now they are a guaranteed favorite heading into Sunday's matchup between these two teams. The Ravens got to do it on the field where the Eagles have done it to me to get the level of respect that I think they are getting in this game. I don't look at the Ravens as being noticeably better than Kansas City the way that I did with Philadelphia. And let's get into that. To me, this game comes down to two major things for the Kansas City Chiefs if they are going to win this and, for the most part, dig themselves out of the hole that they created in the first 2 weeks of the season. Number one, start fast. I feel like every week we have the same conversation around the Kansas City Chiefs. So we looked it up because I wanted to see the Chiefs in their last four games. They are minus 18 entering the second quarter of these games. They always let the other team score first. They always let the other team get first blood. And the Chiefs in these matchups usually find themselves playing from behind. What I really want to see in this game is I want to see the Chiefs playing from a position of strength. I want to see them get on the board early. I want to see them using the crowd to their benefit and going out and playing hyper-energized football. So the number one thing for me in this matchup is very, very simple. Start fast. You don't have to start out with a big blowout, but just in your first scripted 10, 15 plays, can you put a drive together? Can you get off the field? Can you get the crowd into it? So starting fast for me is my number one thing with the Kansas City Chiefs heading into this matchup. The second thing for me is the Chiefs have made their name for the last 18 months of being the team that doesn't make the costly mistakes and getting the opposition to make the costly mistakes. The Chiefs have buttered their bread over the last 3-4 years of being a team that dominates close one-score games. That these games are usually going to be close. I'm going to go ahead and tell you, we already know how this game script is going to be. As we get closer to 5:30, 6 o'clock Kansas City time, you already know that this is going to be a tightly contested one-score game. So all the superstitions that you have picked up over the last couple of years, you're probably going to need them in this one. I don't see either one of these teams. I don't see Kansas City. I don't see Baltimore really running away from one another. These are two very evenly matched teams, teams that are a little bit flawed right now and expecting and hoping to play their best football as the season progresses. So I just don't see a scenario in which Kansas City runs away with this thing. I don't really see a scenario in which Baltimore runs away with this thing. That's not really how Chiefs games operate. So this is going to be a close game in the final 15 minutes, the final 10 minutes, final 8 minutes of this game. And the Chiefs, for the most part, over the last 3 years, they have always been the team to out-execute their opposition. That is not what they've done so far, the first handful of games. Let's remove the Giants game. The Giants just don't have the talent. They don't have the quarterback. They don't have the coaching. They don't really have any of those things, I think, to give Kansas City a problem. And they weren't really a problem in that game. I thought that game, especially in the first half, was much more about what Kansas City was not doing as opposed to anything I thought the Giants were doing. But back to the Chiefs. In their two losses, they have made a critical mistake in the fourth quarter of each of those losses. In week one against the Los Angeles Chargers, it's 3rd and 14. You got a chance to get off the field and get the ball back before the 2-minute warning. And I think everybody listening would take their chances with Patrick Mahomes at the end of the game with a chance to eliminate a team in their division. The defense didn't get off the field. We saw what happened. The Chargers win their first game of the season. The Chiefs turn around in the second game of the season. I thought they outplayed the Eagles for most of the game. For a team that was really outmanned and outgunned for a majority of that thing, the Chiefs really did a good job of just keeping it close, staying competitive. Defense kept them in there, and your offense made the lone turnover of the game, and that was the thing that tilted things in the Eagles' favor. So a couple of things for me in this matchup, because I think it's going to be close. It's a coin flip kind of game. I can give you 5 reasons on why the Ravens win this game. I can give you 5 reasons on how I think Kansas City wins this game. I'm going to pick the Chiefs for this reason. Number one, I don't think the Ravens are this noticeably better than them the way that Vegas is acting heading into this matchup. Having them as a bigger favorite than Philadelphia against Kansas City just doesn't make any sense to me. The Eagles have proven it. The Ravens have not proven it on the field. So I don't know why there is this sentiment the way that the odds are telling you heading into this matchup. Second, I just want to see Kansas City execute, and especially in the first 15 minutes of the game. I want to see their scripted plays. Now that you got Xavier Worthy back, I want to see you get him implemented early on in the game. I want to see that explosiveness. I want to see the defense come out and play with the aggression needed to go win a game like this. This is a massive opportunity, not just for the Ravens, but also for the Kansas City Chiefs heading into this matchup. And then lastly, it is you be the team that makes the play in the fourth quarter. That's how you won 15 games last year. We can go through countless examples from last year of how the Chiefs were the team that made the final play, or they made the most pivotal play, and that is why they ended up winning the game. That did not happen in week one. That did not happen in week two. They are going to be faced with a very similar crossroad in this matchup. I don't think either team is good enough to really run away from the opposition. Do the Chiefs make that one play that ends up tilting things in their favor, or is it going to be the Ravens that end up being that team and you get another fumble from a Derrick Henry, or they've caused a turnover on Kansas City? I really think this game comes down to who can execute in the final 15 minutes of the game, and both teams have really struggled with that so far this season, and that's how both of these teams find themselves under 500 heading into this matchup. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by Tim Barbalays. He covers the Baltimore Ravens as their insider. We'll get his thoughts next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. Tune in Mondays at 4 to hear the play-by-play voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Tim Barbalays, who covers the Baltimore Ravens, getting you ready for a very important Week 4 matchup between the Chiefs and the Ravens, as both teams currently sit at 1-2. One team is going to be at 500 at the end of September. One team is going to have to really dig themselves out of a hole heading into October. Tim, always great to have you on the show, man. Really appreciate your time.
Of course, Carrington. Any time. Just like how everyone drew it up, right? Two below 500 teams heading into Arrowhead.
Absolutely, man. So let's just start with this. How real are the concerns that you have for the Ravens' defense? The point that I've made this week is, well, Buffalo scored against them. Detroit scored against them. Those are two of the five best offenses in the league. I feel like if they struggle against a Kansas City offense that hasn't yet caught its footing, we're going to have some real questions about where they are defensively.
Oh, Carrington, I think I'm already there, man. This has been a shock at how bad they have been to start this year. And they were horrible last year. Through the first 10 weeks of the season, they were one of the worst defenses in football. Then the rest of the way, they tweaked some things schematically, personnel-wise. They ended up being the best defense in football weeks 11 through 18, where they went out, made some additions, Jaire Alexander drafting a Malachi Starks in the first round, Mike Green in the second round. You thought this defense was really going to hit the ground running in Zach Orr's second year as defensive coordinator. It's been anything but that. And I think what's really disturbing is what the Lions did to them on Monday night. Rarely do you see an opposing team out-physical the Ravens, and the Lions just flat-out bullied them. Ravens gave up the third most rushing yards in franchise history in that game, 224. They gave up 295-plus-yard drives. And now the injuries are starting to pile up. Nnamdi Matabike, he's going to miss the game on Sunday. There's fears that it could be a season-ending injury, maybe even worse. John Harbaugh is very concerned about that neck injury. Kyle Van Noy was back on the practice field today, but he's not going to be out there on Sunday either. Ravens are going to be down another one of their defensive linemen. Broderick Washington, who didn't practice today, hasn't practiced all week. So there's real concerns about this defense.
I've been calling this a prove-it week in sports, and I'm looking at the Ravens as this team. If you lose to Buffalo, Kansas City, and Detroit in three of your first four games and your lone win is against the Browns, I feel like we'll still call the Ravens a Super Bowl contender, but can you be considered one if you lost all of your games to teams that are in the same weight class as you are? I don't want to bury the Ravens at all. They're far too talented of a team. But to me, this is one of those kind of prove-it games for both Kansas City and Baltimore.
I completely agree. And look, if the Ravens lose this game on Sunday, am I at the point where, oh, they're going to miss the playoffs? No, because let's just call the AFC North what it is. It stinks this year, you know? The Bengals, Joe Burrow is out for 3 months. The Steelers have tons of concerns defensively, offensively. They're extremely limited. I still think the Ravens will win the division. But yeah, you're right, man. And this is something that I brought up yesterday during a segment. They got to get over this Chiefs hurdle right now. Lamar Jackson has been a stud for years now, but he's been really bad against Kansas City. He's completed less than 55% of his passes in four of the six games he's played against the Chiefs. His passer rating's below 80 in four of those six games. And of course, they're 1-5. The Ravens got to prove they can beat Kansas City, and they've yet to win at Arrowhead with Patrick Mahomes as starting quarterback. They haven't won in Kansas City since 2012, their last Super Bowl year. So I'm with you. Right now, heading into this game, the Ravens against Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, they're 3-9. You got to get over those hurdles.
Yeah, I feel like that's a question for Lamar that just pops up at every single turn. Lamar has done just about everything that you can do as a regular season quarterback, but you alluded to it. He's in this big three with Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and himself. He's been unable to beat Patrick Mahomes. He has had some slip-ups against Josh Allen. Sometimes I just wonder if this Ravens team, if the clock is going to expire for them, if they're just going to be a team that just has tremendous regular season success but is unable to take that next step. Sports history is just littered with those kind of teams.
It's certainly a possibility, for sure, and that's why it just felt like this was going to be the year. And maybe it still will, Carrington. I mean, it's still September. But, I mean, how many different articles did you read or guests, you know, shows say, this is the best roster in football. This is the best Ravens roster in the Lamar Jackson era. And the roster did seem very loaded. They really didn't lose all that much from last year, running it back but with the additions of some free agent acquisitions in the draft. And that's why it's been so disappointing for them to get off to this start. And in particular, that game against Buffalo, where it's one thing to lose against the Bills, but it's how they lost that game. Another fourth quarter collapse, a game in which it looked like they were going to run the Bills out of the gym. And then they just ended up, you know, gacking it away late. So it's definitely in the back of their heads, man. I mean, you can't tell me it's not a mental component at this point. And trust me, if they get up by double digits on Sunday and Mahomes leads the touchdown drive, you can't tell me there's going to be people on that sideline with the thought, here we go again.
Tim, moving to one of the top stories right now with the Ravens has been the fumbles from Derrick Henry. If you look at his career, this isn't really a part of his track record. He's not really a guy who's been known for that. What do you make of the early season struggles from the future Hall of Fame running back?
So I'll say this when it's with Derrick Henry. Anyone, and we know the history of running backs in their 30s, when it goes, it tends to go quick. I'm not saying this guy's washed. That is not what I'm saying at all. No one in Baltimore envisioned that he was going to have an encore season better than last year where he rushed for over 1,900 yards. That's just not going to happen. I still think he's going to have a strong year. But in terms of the fumbles, Yeah, it's a concern. You saw the shot of him on the sidelines after that fumble Monday night, throwing his helmet down and almost taking himself out in the process. You know, you could tell how pissed he was and upset he was, and that outburst was very, very uncharacteristic out of Derrick Henry. And quite frankly, it told me everything you need to know. And I think it is in his head. And this is a storyline until it's not.
Tim, looking at the last 2 weeks from the Ravens, what were the Browns capable of doing to slow down Derrick Henry? What did the Lions do on Monday night to slow him down as well?
Well, I think that we've seen, especially in that Lions game, the Ravens have just gotten dominated in the trenches. The Ravens' offensive line, it's four out of the five are the same starters from last year. Now, I will say Ronnie Stanley, his status very much up in the air on Sunday, and if he misses, then that'll be very interesting to see how the Ravens' offensive line holds up. But I think they're just getting kind of whooped up front, to be honest. And there has been some runs from Derrick Henry in which that, you know, he's tiptoeing a little bit, maybe thinking a little too much. But I think it's just they're getting beat up front. And the pass rush has been there. Myles Garrett was having a field day. The Lions sacked Lamar Jackson seven times. That tied a career high. I remember seeing the Pro Football Focus stat. He was pressured 30 times. That just seems incomprehensible, the fact that you can get 30 pressures in a single football game. The Ravens have to be better up front on the O-line and the D-line.
Tim, there was a lot of talk surrounding John Harbaugh after week one. Was that just usual frustration from Ravens fans about a difficult loss, or is there kind of problems right now happening in Baltimore?
Well, Harbs has been a big lightning rod for criticism for quite some time. Heck, Carrington, we can go back after the 2023 AFC Championship, where I think everybody was confident that the Ravens were going to beat the Chiefs in that one. Ravens ran the ball all of six times in that football game. So Harbs is under the microscope for sure, and I think a lot of people are pointing to the 17 double-digit second-half leads that John Harbaugh has blown since becoming head coach in 2008. It's been a long time, man. And if that type of game that happened against the Bills happened in the postseason, it wouldn't shock me at all if John Harbaugh lost his job. If the Ravens do not make the playoffs this year, and I don't think that that's going to happen, but if they didn't make the playoffs, I think it would cost John Harbaugh his job, because ultimately we've seen so many different guys come in terms of coordinators, in terms of defensive players, offensive players, and these collapses continue to happen. And fair or unfair, John Harbaugh is the one constant throughout all of them.
Tim, I always ask you this question. Give me your Chiefs win-if scenario. Give me your Ravens win-if scenario.
Well, Chiefs win if they continue to do what's happened over these past couple of games. They dominate the line of scrimmage. They're strong on third downs. We saw that the Lions dominated time of possession, and they were able to keep the Ravens' offense on the sidelines. They're able to force turnovers as well. But Ravens, it's really pretty much just the same exact thing, man. This defense has to get back on track. They have to get after Patrick Mahomes. Their pass rush has been non-existent. Jared Goff, who can't move nearly as well as Patrick Mahomes, didn't get sacked once. I think that's a huge concern for me. Ravens are going to have to get a pass rush on Patrick Mahomes if they're going to have a chance to win this one.
Funny, Tim, because this game maybe doesn't have the kind of pop and sizzle that you and I both thought with two 3-0 teams, but that doesn't make this game any less important. This is a massive swing game for both the home and the road team on Sunday afternoon.
Without question, man. And look, I don't know how you can really pick the Ravens in this spot. I'm not saying they can't get it done, but I got to see them get it done in Arrowhead before I can confidently pick them. So I would lean with Kansas City. I'm sure you guys have talked a lot all week long about the point spread. I'm kind of shocked that the Ravens are 2.5-point favorites in this one. And to put it in perspective, they're a bigger favorite in Arrowhead than the Eagles were a couple weeks ago. So Vegas has been high on the Ravens. Maybe they're right, but I'm not picking them this week.
That's my guy, Tim Barbalace. Tim, man, always appreciate your time, man.
Of course. You got it, Carrington. Anytime.
Absolutely. That is Tim Barbalace joining us on the show. He is the Ravens insider. Happy to have him join us on the show and get you ready for Sunday afternoon's matchup. I do think he makes a very fair point about Lamar. It's something that we've been discussing this week. I mean, if you are Lamar, now your talent may say that you are the second best quarterback out of that grouping. But I think in terms of what we've seen on the field as team accomplishments, I think people consider the Ravens to be the third best team in the AFC, and maybe that's changed because of the early results of the season. But if you're going to be in that mix, and you certainly deserve to be in that mix as a quarterback, you can't be 1-4 against Patrick Mahomes and also have a losing record against Josh Allen. Those are the guys that you're going to need to beat, and we see this play itself out every year. There is a significant advantage in being the one seed right now in the AFC, more so than just the bye. If you look at Kansas City's path when they've been the one seed, as opposed to when they weren't the one seed and they had to go on the road to both Buffalo and Baltimore, now they ended up winning those games. Man, it's a really, really difficult thing to do. And you've also noticed that when the Chiefs are the one seed, you usually get the winner of the AFC South in that second round. Well, it's a tremendous advantage to not have to play the other two big dogs in the AFC in back-to-back. I think you have to eliminate the Ravens from the one seed conversation if they lose this. So they could still win their division, sure. But you could be in a situation where you got to beat both Kansas City and Buffalo on the road to go to a Super Bowl. I just don't think that that's Baltimore's best path, because I don't think that's anybody's best path to get to the Super Bowl. So if you're the Ravens, you got to prove, A, that you can beat Kansas City. You also got to prove to me that you can stand toe-to-toe with the other heavyweight teams. It will be a question that I will be asking myself on Monday if the Ravens lose this, that we all have written it down as a foregone conclusion that the Ravens are going to make the postseason. Maybe that's the case. But if you play Super Bowl contenders and you consistently lose to Super Bowl contenders, does that make you a Super Bowl contending team? Because Baltimore will have ended the month losing to Buffalo, losing to Detroit, and in this example, losing to Kansas City, and your one win was a dominant win against the Cleveland Browns. I don't know if we can put you into the championship conversation. I think you have to play yourself into the championship conversation. We'll get back to the Chiefs here coming up in just a bit, but it is time for one of my favorite segments that we do on the show. You know that we love movies on this show, and one movie that we love to quote is Meet the Parents, and you know.
With the knowledge you've been given, you are now on the inside of what I like to call the Burns family circle of trust. See, if I can't trust you, Greg, then I have no choice but to put you right back outside the circle, and once you're out, you're out. There's no coming back.
Well, I would definitely like to stay inside the circle.
Today's Circle of Trust is brought to you by Brew Brothers at Harris, Kansas City. Now open for daily breakfast, lunch, and dinner with mouthwatering appetizers, juicy burgers, steak, pastas, and more. You can wash it all down with a cold beverage. You can also catch the game. It's also brought to you by Aspen Lawn Care and Pest Control, where you can expect the best. If we are looking at college football, I believe that there are three teams right now that we are trying to figure out if we are going to put them inside our Burns family circle of trust. Rob, let's start with Ole Miss if we're going to put them inside our circle of trust. They got a very important game on Saturday against LSU. If you look at Ole Miss's schedule, they can go from good team to, wait, is this team going to make the college football playoff? You know that for teams like Ole Miss, it is the intersection of talent, coaching, and schedule. If they can win this game at home against a top five team in LSU, they go on the road and play Georgia. Let's assume they lose that, but you're allowed mulligans in the new system we have in college football. Their road game against Oklahoma just got significantly easier now with Oklahoma starting quarterback out for the foreseeable future. South Carolina is not as tough as we thought it could potentially be. Florida is not as tough as we thought it can be. And then you got your road game, your rivalry game at the end of the season against Mississippi State that I think has proven themselves to be certainly a worthy competitor, beating Arizona State earlier this season. Ole Miss right now, I don't think they're on a lot of people's radar. If they win this game at home against LSU, they're going to have to be on your radar as one of the potential wild card teams. I don't think they're winning the SEC, but if you were SEC spots that are available, if you're a program like Missouri, if you're a program like Indiana in the Big Ten, if you're one of those programs, I'd be keeping a close eye on Ole Miss and how they play on Saturday.
They are not inside my circle of trust right now. They kind of feel similar to me to how Tennessee is. I have no doubt Tennessee's a good program, and I think Tennessee and Ole Miss are very similar. Tennessee had one of those type of teams in their backyard, what, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago in Georgia? And they found a way to lose the game, and now you feel like Tennessee has an uphill battle to get back to the college football playoff. It feels like they're on the outside looking in. Ole Miss, I feel like, is very similar to Tennessee. If you go out there and you beat LSU, I will feel different about you, and I might say that you're inside the circle because the schedule starts to break in your favor. But this is the kind of game that Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin seem to historically lose. Like, this is just the game. They always end a spicy 9-3, and their fans talk about, oh, we were good. We were just one game away. Well, that one game is always this one, so they're outside my circle, and I think LSU is going to get them this weekend because LSU feels like the best team in the country to me right now.
You're calling them the Baltimore Ravens of college football. Good regular season team, just unable to get it done. You're right. Last year, guess how many games Ole Miss won? They won nine games yeah. last year. If you want to go back to 2023, you're right with Ole Miss. That year they won 10 games because they won. They won 10 games back in 2023. They ended up winning their bowl game as well. They're in the Peach Bowl against Penn State. You're right. But usually, to give Ole Miss a little bit of credit, they usually lose those games on the road. Let's see if they'll lose this game at home. It was weird. Last year, they had that random loss to Kentucky that just didn't really make any sense, and that all but eliminated them from the college football playoff conversation. I am not putting Alabama inside my circle of trust. I just don't trust them. Maybe I'm overreacting to the week one loss against Florida State, but if there has been a staple, if there has been a calling card, a brand name for Alabama over the last 20 years, it has been controlling the line of scrimmage. They couldn't stop Florida State from running, and they couldn't run the football themselves. You now expect me to think if they're going on the road in Georgia with those dogs and expecting them to win? I can't do it. I actually think that Georgia handles Alabama, and I think they win this pretty comfortably. I actually took an alt line on this one. Give me Georgia by at least a touchdown in this one. I think there's a chance they roll the tide.
I see what you did there. Come on now. Don't act like that wasn't on purpose. That was well done. I'm actually going to disagree with you here. I have Alabama inside my circle of trust, and we see Saturday's game very differently. I am playing where the Sharps are playing on Saturday. I think Bama money line is the play. I think Georgia is propped up a lot by name more than game. We had Roddy Jones on the show yesterday. He had this stat. Catch the podcast page. Do you know that Georgia doesn't have a defensive lineman with a sack this year? And it's not like Georgia has played, you know, Notre Dame, Penn State. They've played Austin Peay, and they've played Marshall. You should get a sack against one of those teams from your defensive line if you're Georgia. I think Bama played really poor in the first week of the year. But you know what? I think that Florida State team's a lot better than we think. I think that Florida State team might be in the college football playoff. So a week one road game at a playoff team is very difficult. I think Bama is going to bounce back in a big way between the hedges. So I think they're an SEC title threat. They are definitely inside my circle of trust.
Yeah, you just got to show me that you can go win this road game. That's not the program that they've been against Kalen DeBoer. They lost week one against Florida State. If you go back to last year, they lost the game to Oklahoma 24-3. They lost to Tennessee last year on the road. They lost to Vanderbilt on the road. I mean, he has one road win so far in the SEC. Now, it's against LSU last year, but that was also a disappointing LSU year. I just can't put Alabama in my circle of trust. Not just yet. Maybe the ultimate circle of trust team is Penn State. Everything in my fiber is telling me this is when Penn State finally gets over the hump. They're at home. They've got the more experienced quarterback. They've got the better rushing attack. It's the whiteout game. It's at night. It's Happy Valley. You're going against a quarterback who is going on the road for the first time in this kind of environment. Everything in my body is telling me to pick Penn State. I think they might be the most talented team in the country. It's tough to ride with them in a big game. I'm going to put Penn State in my circle of trust. I'm picking them to win this weekend. It just feels like it. I mean, I know I fooled myself last year when they had that home game against Ohio State. And you remember they threw that pick six early in the game and that basically did them in. I don't care. I'm taking Penn State at home to win in the whiteout. I'm putting Penn State in my circle of trust.
We absolutely see this one the exact same. Now, Penn State does really get in their own way when it comes to playing top five opponents. But they usually get one of those type of teams at home. Remember, they beat with Saquon Barkley. They smoked a good Michigan team one year. They've beaten Ohio State at home before. It feels like when the game is bigger or on the road or a neutral, that's where they fall apart. And I will say this. It's the say-it-out-loud test, the Carrington say-it-out-loud test. Dante Moore, in the first environment like this, on the road, West Coast to East Coast, night game, whiteout, Happy Valley. Do we think he's going to play the same way there that he played against Northwestern? He had all day, and he looked great against Oklahoma State, who might be the worst team in the Big 12. Like, this is a step up in competition, a step up in atmosphere. Dante Moore has never experienced anything like this before. I'm with you. Penn State's in my circle. I'm looking forward to be lit down, though, because James Franklin in a big spot.
I mean, always. I'm looking at their stats right now. Under James Franklin, Penn State is 3-17 in games against teams that are ranked in the top 10. They're 1-12 against teams that are ranked in the top 5. We're talking about against the elite, the Ohio States, the Michigans, the Oregons. They never win this game. I know I'm going to look silly. I know I'm going to look foolish betting on Penn State. I just know it. I got to take him at home at night for everything that you're saying. Do I trust Dante Moore to go on the road and win this game? No, I don't trust him because I don't know him. So I can't put him inside my circle of trust. Our circle of trust is brought to you by Brew Brothers at Harrah's Kansas City. Go stop by for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Get yourself some appetizers, some burgers, some steaks, some pastas, whatever you're looking for. You can also wash it down with the ice-cold beverage and catch it before the game. Also, our friends over at Aspen Lawn Care and Pest Control. Coming up on the other side, Seattle somehow has put themselves in the center of the national conversation. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here. So drive.
The Drive. With Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's get to a couple of national stories, and then we'll get back to Chiefs Week 4 matchup against the Baltimore Ravens. The first one, actually both of these stories, come out of Seattle. The first one is Tony Gonzalez and Richard Sherman were on the Amazon desk, and they were talking about Richard Sherman's old teammate, Russell Wilson. Now, I think it goes without saying, we know that Richard Sherman is not a big fan of Russell Wilson. I didn't know it was like this, though.
If ever there was somebody who played himself out of a Hall of Fame, it's Russell Wilson.
Really?
And I say that because look at what's happened ever since he left Seattle. When he was in Seattle, he was the man. He was making these good plays. He won a Super Bowl, went to two of them. But as soon as he left there, he went to Denver, signed that big old deal. They paid him $39 million to leave. He goes to Pittsburgh, plays there 1 year. There he's out of there. Now he goes here and has three games. I just don't know if it's going to get any better. And I don't want to see him on a sideline holding a clipboard.
So you're very much under the what have you done for me lately thing in taking away the first, you know, decade of his career.
Absolutely. And I just don't think he's done himself any favors since he left Seattle. And I don't know. How's it going to get better?
I don't know. I agree. I think you got to judge his career off when the Legion of Boom was there. He had a legendary defense, an all-time defense, and how much success he had. And then without that legendary defense, the success he had. Without that legendary defense, he's been 4-11, 7-8, 0-3 to start with the Giants. Like, that's, he was a winning football player in Seattle, and people said, hey, winning is football player, all this good stuff, all these accolades, and now you get to go on your own and you get to prove, hey, I'm this great quarterback. I'm this guy that's going to be dominant, and it just hasn't worked out that way.
Hey, man. I don't have any issues with Tony Gonzalez. Tony Gonzalez has never been teammates with the man. Tony Gonzalez is, to me, just making an observation. Hey, look, I mean, everything he said was facts. Now, everything that Richard Sherman said might also have been facts, but then it started with, oh, yeah, when I was on his team, we were good. And then when I left, we were trash. Wait, hold on. What? That's supposed to be your man's. I'm all for broadcasters being biased in some situations. I would understand if Richard Sherman had a bias towards Russell Wilson. You guys won a Super Bowl together. It don't sound like they're BFFs. Sometimes who speaks up for you or if people speaks up for you matters a whole lot. I remember back whenever Kyler Murray, we were kind of laughing and joking about the Call of Duty. Do you remember anybody coming out and saying, no, that's not true about him? He's always in the film room. He's always studying. He's one of the hardest working quarterbacks I know. I don't remember that being the case. We've seen a lot of people disparage the character of Aaron Rodgers over the last 5 years. Have you seen just a gang of people willing to just say, no, that's not true? Aaron's one of my favorite teammates. He's my brother. I love him. You don't really see a whole lot of those people. Man, I feel like Russell Wilson is in the exact same category. It's kind of cool to make fun of Russell Wilson. That wasn't the case 5-6 years ago. There was a media push to help Russell Wilson get an MVP. You guys remember the Let Russ Cook? I remember there's a 2-week stretch there that the media was just dumbfounded that they never voted him one time to win NFL MVP. Like, no, we got to do this for Russ. He's one of the more popular players in the league. Now we're saying he's been trash apart from that defense. How quickly things change. Russ, man, I'm still pulling for you. We're still pulling for you here on this show. I can't speak for anybody else. That was an unnecessary bullet by Richard Sherman. Tony Gonzalez is one thing. Sherm, you're supposed to defend your guy. You're supposed to have your guys back. There's no scenario in which Travis Kelce becomes an analyst and then smokes Patrick Mahomes. No chance. None.
I mean, I agree with your point. It's pretty clear, though, that we've learned over time, Marshawn Lynch and every member of the Legion of Boom, they did not like 100%. Russell Wilson.
No, like, I think that's obvious. Like Doug Baldwin, yep. Richard Sherman. Yeah, it is obvious. The core of that team, they have made it very obvious. After that first year in Denver, the information that usually comes out of locker rooms. You know, after every firing or every decision to split ways, there's always the what had happened story. You know, it's from ESPN, Seth Wickersham. It's from The Athletic. It's from, you always get that what had happened. Remember the story that came out about Russell and he had his own office and another coach came up to him and asked, are you a coach or a player? Like, if you're going to be a player, you got to be visible. You got to be in the locker room. They got to feel like you are one of the guys. And they don't feel like you're one of the guys. Man, that stuff matters, man. You guys got a coworker that you can't joke around. Your relationship is just going to be different. Hey, it's all us guys over here. We can joke. We can talk like this. And then when you come around, like, we just don't vibe and connect. You need to feel that way about your quarterback. And I think it's just very, very obvious that that is not how they feel about their quarterback in Seattle. Another Seattle story. So maybe you guys saw this. Cal Raleigh hit his 60th home run. So at first, a man caught the 60th home run ball. He then turned around and then gave it to a kid. Pretty cool. Pretty selfless act. You catch a historic home run ball, a ball that's certainly worth something. You then instantly, didn't even hesitate, decided to give it to a kid. Cool. Cool deal. All right. Well, the kid, he's a 12-year-old Mariners fan. He decides to give the ball back to Cal Raleigh. Now, I applaud this. Now, I mean, there's some balls I would certainly sell, right? Like, if you hit if you caught 70 from Mark McGwire or 72 from Barry Bonds, yeah, I'm not giving that ball back. But I understand as a kid, you catch the 60th home run ball. This is your favorite player. It's a part of history. I really do get you wanting to give it back to him. So he gave him the ball back. In exchange for giving him the 60th home run ball, who they have appraised it at around $200,000. They think that this ball is worth $200K. The Mariners gave him an autographed bat from Cal Raleigh. He got to meet him, and he also gets to watch batting practice from on the field. If you are this kid's dad, you got to step in and say, no, you're not. Again, I'm perfectly fine if you don't want to get any cash out of the deal. So you're telling me that this little boy, out of the kindness of his own heart, caught something that could pay for his college or at least set you up. Who knows how much college is going to cost when that kid is ready. So he could set you up for your late teenage years, your early 20s. He decided to give it back to you, and you gave him something that's probably worth, let's be generous here, $2,500, $3,000. You listening right now, if you really wanted to get this package, it would probably cost you around $3,000. If you wanted an autographed bat from a baseball player and to go watch batting practice from on the field, that's not super hard to get accomplished for you. It's really not that hard to get. That can't be the case. At a minimum, you should get season tickets. I don't know why baseball doesn't establish this. Because we have these home run balls or these moments that come up all the time. They need to be a universal package of what you get if you're in this situation. So it's not up to the individual clubs to negotiate and go back and forth and end up doing this. If you catch one of these home run balls and you want to give it back to us, this is what we'll give you. But at a minimum, season tickets has to be included. I'm not giving you the ball back if they don't include tickets. So wait, you're telling me that this 12-year-old kid, his family took for him to go to the game. He gets the 60th home run ball. Now, if he wants to go to the postseason game, he has to buy tickets for the game? No chance. No, not at all. I'll happily give you the ball back. Why can't I get that little golden ticket that the baseball players have? There's this thing that they give baseball players. I think you have to play a decade, and they give you a card. I've seen it before. I saw it on a podcast. Chase Utley showed it on a podcast. I think it was on Part of My Take. So they have a card that you can go to any baseball stadium, and you can get four tickets, any baseball game, any non-playoff game. That's what fans should get when you get these kind of souvenirs. If you get Derek Jeter's 3,000th hit and you want to give it back to the Yankees, they should give you this card. You can go to any baseball game in the regular season that you want, four tickets for you and your family. That's what it should be. Not an autographed bat that you could go get from Rally House and batting practice from on the field that you could get at a charity auction for a relatively low price. The Mariners should be ashamed of themselves if this is what they offered the kid. You got to get more money than this. You got to get him a suite. Hey, you can have your birthday party here. Hey, why don't you and your friends play Mario Kart on the Jumbotron? If you're not going to give him cash for it, at least give him a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I'm telling you, batting practice from on the field is not a once-in-a-lifetime experience. What if the Mariners make the World Series? How does he get World Series tickets? Shame on you, Seattle. You got to do better for that kid that gave the ball back of his own volition. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get back to Week 4, Chiefs and Ravens. Keep it right here. So drive.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.